The Fall, Commentary for the April 9, 2022 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. This week's commentary is taken from Chapter 6 of my book, Creation, Myth, or Majesty. But each person is tempted when they are dragged away by their own evil desire and enticed. Then after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. James 1, verses 14 and 15. The story of mankind's fall into sin is another aspect of creation. If nothing else, it certainly marks the creation of drama. The protagonist, Eve, is confronted by the antagonist, the serpent, and chooses to cast her lot with this nemesis. Then if that is not enough, she entices Adam, her paramour, to join this gang of anarchists. Is the piece of fruit significant? It is not. It may only be a stage prop for the playwright to hang their story on. While so many have focused so much attention on the fruit, seeing an intrinsic evil in that single piece of produce, any prop would have performed equally well for progressing the story to its conclusion. Was this play predestined to produce the outcome it did? The writer of Genesis chapter 1 identifies God as a source of light, interjecting it into the darkness of the earth. This is parallel to the revelation of the illuminating nature of Jesus found in the Gospel of John chapter 1. However, the denouement of the Bible has the righteous living in a perfect world where there is no darkness, only the light of God. It further states that the sun and moon are not needed as a result. If perfection is defined as no darkness, sun or moon, then that could mean that the world as created was less than perfect. We should not look behind us to creation for a utopian blueprint, but instead we should be looking forward to that day of promise. Creation itself was as much about an Edenic choosing as the tree in the midst of the garden ever was. For it was in the very first week that the author sets the stage for the ultimate choice between darkness and light. The choice metaphorically may not be between eating or not eating a piece of fruit, but between light and darkness. That choice was not created in the Garden of Eden, but from the very first day of creation. Perhaps creation was never meant to be a scientific exposition on origins, but was instead intended to be more of a legal brief outlining the criminal behavior of the defendants, mankind. The case could be made that from the very beginning, every effort was made to provide opportunity for choice between light and darkness, and mankind chose darkness. Good and evil were present from that beginning, the tree of knowledge in the garden notwithstanding. Light is good and darkness is evil, the Bible tells us. So God himself, who made darkness a part of the creation, may have purposely introduced evil into the world. This is also supported by the verses in Revelation chapter 12 that tell us that the devil, who is identified as the founder of evil, was cast out into the earth. Who cast him out? God did, of course. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil, whether metaphorical or literal, did not bring evil to mankind. It was already there. Some, who opt for a literal tree and an innocent and pure creation, have suggested that evil was only allowed in the vicinity of the tree, and the rest of the world remained pure. If that is the case, it must have been an excessively big tree indeed. For not only was a serpent, the devil, cast into the earth, but one-third of the angels with him. If we take numbers for angels from the Bible and multiply them out, one-third of the angels could easily amount to well over 50 million of them. Mankind was surrounded by choice. He could choose the light and trust God, or he could choose the darkness and all that came with it. The fact that the Bible tells us that God placed mankind in the Garden of Eden, where the tree of knowledge of good and evil was, even if it is taken metaphorically, indicates that God had no intention of allowing man to escape this choice without committing to either darkness or light. Light would not be allowed to be a default position. A choice must be made. That this was a tree of knowledge might imply that this was a choice made without knowledge. If so, it was no doubt a surprise to Adam and Eve that so many dire things happened after they chose darkness. First and foremost, once the choice was made, the Garden of Eden, with its choice paradigm, was no longer necessary. It was taken away. The lovely garden that God had planted was to be replaced with one man must scrabble from the earth. Humanity came face to face with consequences and responsibility. Eve was to bear children in pain, per the Bible. However, there is no indication from the Bible that she ever gave birth otherwise. One might think that childbirth itself was a curse in the absence of any prior experience. But would God have commanded them to multiply if they did not have the ability to do so? The biblical account gets a bit murky on this issue, as the command to multiply was given on the sixth day of creation. Yet there is no possibility for man to comply until he has a woman. The chapter 1 account says God created both male and female on the sixth day. Yet per the chapter 2 account, Eve does not appear to have been created until after man was put in Eden and had named all the animals. Furthermore, Eve's creation is a special event, unique from Adam's. One almost gets the feeling of, oops, we messed up. We told Adam to multiply, but we forgot to make it possible. In any event, oversight or not, procreation would not have been physically attainable without both genders. Therefore, if procreation were not possible until after mankind chose his moral direction, then Eve's creation could have been in anticipation of the choice. Our Mormon friends assert mankind's fall would have been expected, even required. This may be derived from a literal understanding of the events and their sequence in Genesis, albeit from a non-traditional perspective. We can only speculate that procreation was possible before the encounter with the serpent, based on the command to multiply being anti-Edenic. These conflicting perspectives argue for a metaphorical rather than a literal approach to the creation saga. To refer to my previous comment on this choice making in the paradigm of the morality play, the knowledge of good and evil may simply be referring to a relativistic morality based on an implicit trust in human knowledge as a foundation of understanding to determine the appropriate moral direction in every circumstance. This contrasts to choosing an absolute morality founded in an unquestioning trust in knowledge outside of our understanding, divine knowledge, as a basis for moral direction. This latter would be a faith-based morality that places the onus for untoward results of that morality on God rather than on ourselves. There are downsides to either understanding. Relativistic morality, which relies on our understanding, cannot remove guilt because, although we must make a moral choice, we almost never have all the facts we need. Therefore, we will make poorly informed decisions that will produce negative outcomes, and we will bear the burden of the guilt that results. Guilt can be mentally destructive, so we try to have our cake and eat it too. By turning from God and following our own path, we chose to accept responsibility for the negative results of our choices. But instead of doing so, we tend to cast the guilt upon God rather than recognizing our own responsibility. Since God had the power to prevent it, He's guilty, not us. I call this the theodicy paradox, an attempt to have personal freedom without guilt or consequence. On the other hand, absolutists who seek to absolve themselves of all free choice have the danger of becoming cavalier about the results of their actions, believing they are only doing God's will and following divine orders. The dangerous presumption is that they can always understand God's will and have God under obligation to reveal His will in every circumstance. This type of reasoning has given us the Crusades and the Inquisition. Both were considered by most to be moral failings. God expects us to choose a middle ground combining faith and reason. While it is true that He expects us to live by faith, God also tells us to reason. We are to reason according to the ability He has given us, while trusting to His guidance where doubts exist. The experience of Christopher Columbus is instructive. Columbus relied on reason when he set forth with his three ships for the East Indies. Believing the world to be round, he felt he could reach the far east by sailing west. But his calculations were wrong. The journey was taking much longer than he expected. But he continued to sail on in faith. Eventually that faith was rewarded, but not as he expected. Instead of reaching the East Indies, he discovered the islands of the Caribbean. Despite not having the facts he needed about the true size of the earth and what lay across the Atlantic Ocean, he sailed on in faith and found that the doors opened to a whole new understanding of that world. Like Columbus, we can begin our journey into morality based on the facts we can cobble together, knowing that they are most probably flawed due to an incomplete perspective. Then we can set sail across that sea of moral ambiguity with our sails filled with an unremitting faith in the understanding that God will see us to a morality that is right where it should be, whether we knew it or not. New worlds of understanding may await us. Thank you for listening to this podcast. You can find the written version of this podcast along with the scripture footnotes supporting the ideas in the podcast at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. You can find other podcasts as well as hundreds of written commentaries at that website as well. May God richly bless you and your family.